Chapter 23, The Second Coming. What rough beast, its hour come round at last. Things fall apart. When Jobs unveiled the next computer in 1988, there was a burst of excitement. That fizzled when the computer finally went on sale the following year. Jobs' ability to dazzle, intimidate, and spin the press began to fail him, and there was a series of stories on the company's woes. Next is incompatible with other computers at a time when the industry is moving toward interchangeable systems, Bart Ziegler of Associated Press reported. Because relatively little software exists to run on Next, it has a hard time attracting customers. Next tried to reposition itself as the leader in a new category, personal workstations, for people who wanted the power of a workstation and the friendliness of a personal computer. But those customers were by now buying them from fast-growing Sun Microsystems. Revenues for Next in 1990 were $28 million. Sun made $2.5 billion that year. IBM abandoned its deal to license the Next software, so Jobs was forced to do something against his nature. Despite his ingrained belief that hardware and software should be integrally linked, he agreed in January 1992 to license the Next Step operating system to run on other computers. One surprising defender of Jobs was Jean-Louis Gasset, who had bumped elbows with Jobs when he replaced him at Apple and subsequently been ousted himself. He wrote an article extolling the creativity of Next products. Next might not be Apple, Gasset argued, but Steve is still Steve. A few days later, his wife answered a knock on the door and went running upstairs to tell him that Jobs was standing there. He thanked Gasset for the article and invited him to an event where Intel's Andy Grove would join Jobs in announcing that Next Step would be ported to the IBM Intel platform. I sat next to Steve's father, Paul Jobs, a movingly dignified individual, Gasset recalled. He raised a difficult son, but he was proud and happy to see him on stage with Andy Grove. A year later, Jobs took the inevitable subsequent step. He gave up making the hardware altogether. This was a painful decision, just as it had been when he gave up making hardware at Pixar. He cared about all aspects of his products, but the hardware was a particular passion. He was energized by great design, obsessed over manufacturing details, and would spend hours watching his robots make his perfect machines. But now he had to lay off more than half his workforce, sell his beloved factory to Canon, which auctioned off the fancy furniture, and satisfy himself with a company that tried to license an operating system to manufacturers of uninspired machines. By the mid-1990s, Jobs was finding some pleasure in his new family life and his astonishing triumph in the movie business. But he despaired about the personal computer industry. Innovation has virtually ceased, he told Gary Wolfe of Wired at the end of 1995. Microsoft dominates with very little innovation. Apple lost. The desktop market has entered the dark ages. He was also gloomy in an interview with Tony Perkins and the editors of Red Herring. First, he displayed the bad Steve side of his personality. Soon after Perkins and his colleagues arrived, Jobs slipped out the back door for a walk, and he didn't return for 45 minutes. When the magazine's photographer began taking pictures, he snapped at her sarcastically and made her stop. Perkins later noted, "Manipulation, selfishness, or downright rudeness. We couldn't figure out the motivation behind his madness." When he finally settled down for the interview, he said that even the advent of the web would do little to stop Microsoft's domination. "Windows has won," he said. "It beat the Mac, unfortunately, It beat Unix. It beat OS2. An inferior product won.